And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 3 of the Four Horsemen. So tonight you've got three of the horsemen. Gannicus is feeling a little bit under the weather. So you got Adam, Paul, and me, Leo. So today we're going to cover a couple of different things. We're going to try and go a little bit heavy, keep it a little bit light too. So we've got some stories that we'll call locker room talk. And then we're going to kind of get into despair and overcoming life's adversities. So with that being said, boys, how we doing? How was our week?
It's a good week, man. Felt good. Been excited about this for sure.
I want to just say that we're up to episode 3 here, and that is actually 3 weeks is a lot longer than a lot of relationships in the group last.
We're doing good. Whoa! Shots fired.
Pew, pew.
Yeah, man. I've definitely noticed that, like, it's been pretty good, man. Ups and downs, highs and lows, but that's life. But are you guys noticing that, like, as we progress into this further and further, like, because we originally talked about just doing one a month, and now that's become once a week, and I'm getting more and more excited about it every week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I got blue balls over.
Right there with you.
Right? All right, so let's see. Why don't we cut the heavy stuff out first, and then we'll work our way into some of our locker room stories. So I guess you're going to have to bear with us this week, ladies and gents, because we decided that this one's going to be more of a fireside chat than a structured, Q&A type deal. So, oh, by the way, we'd also like to apologize for episode 2 and our technical difficulties. This week we're running on a completely different platform. We all went out and pieced together some audio equipment, so hopefully your listening experience is significantly better. Bear with us through our growing pains, please. That being said, Paul, why don't you start us off with, why don't you give us a definition of despair in your words?
Sure thing, man. And this is something that people who are close to me, they've already heard me say this. Despair, I believe, depression happens to most humans. And, although it's not always diagnosable, the three of us, of course, we admin for a support group, and we see stories on the regular of just people going through the tough stuff. Now, the difference between depression and despair is what's often the final nail in that depression. It's just when things get so bleak. And the way I talk about it is, let's say your bank account is overdrawn $5. Now, that's not that big of a fucking deal. You put $6 in, you're $1 in the black, you're good to go, problem solved. However, when the fucking despair train starts running, that's when it's like, oh shit, I'm $5 overdrawn. Man, I'm always overdrawn. Why is there never enough? Why am I never fucking enough? God damn, and it just keeps building. And pretty soon, you're $5 overdrawn, and yet you want to throw yourself off a fucking bridge. That's when despair is at play. And it's just something that we need to recognize, identify, and know how to stop in its tracks, because it just gets unhealthy real quick,
Yeah, it becomes kind of like a cancer, Like, maybe if you're doing okay and you're $5 in the negative, like, that's the one thing that's wrong with your life. It's not that big of a deal. But if it's something that you deal with all the time and it starts to adversely affect you, then it'll change your whole perception. And once your perception's changed, it's like, oh, well, I'm $5 in the negative. I didn't make my bed. My laundry's not done. I obviously don't give a fuck about me, so why would anybody else give a fuck about me?
Yeah.
And it'll just start a snowballing effect. And it's something that you don't even realize oftentimes until you're in that despair state. So you'll just have this realization of negativity, and it can be kind of soul crushing.
Yeah.
What do you think, Adam?
Well, man, for me, it's like just feeling even active in every facet of your life. You know, if you get to the point where you're like, well, if I don't like myself, who could like me? You know, and you just keep digging and digging more and more, and you get further down. And things you know you should enjoy that just don't bring any joy to your life. And it's just this, it's hard. It's really hard. And it's all about you've got to completely reboot the whole how you see not only yourself, but everyone else. Just, you know, finding that self-worth. It's, and as guys, it's hard to even talk about it because it's not something we're really meant to be, feeling. We're meant to be, you know, out front leading, protecting, getting shit done. But yeah, there's been points in my life where I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror. I just didn't like who I was looking at. Now I fucking love looking at myself. Fantastic.
I like looking at you too, mostly naked.
Yeah, you saw that dick pic I sent you before, didn't you?
You know?
Spend hours every day looking at both your faces.
So erect. So
you know, it's weird, but we do. So, all right. We got into despair, like what our definition of it is. You guys notice that self-medication is becoming more prevalent with people that are on their way to despair, but maybe not quite there yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Self-medication, self-diagnosis even. It's just, yeah, it could be it's fucking bad.
And it's not always like super noticeable. It's not always like somebody just being shithoused all the time. Like it can be little things.
Personal grooming standards, home standards.
Yeah, little stuff like that. You know, maybe they're just sleeping all the time or something like that. You know, when I'm on that way, when I'm headed to just absolute negativity, I am just tired all the time. And I'm normally a pretty active dude, but when you're at the what the fuck's the point stage, like all you want to do is sleep. So it's not always, you know, someone that's just trying to drown themselves in a bottle. I think that it's important for all of us, especially as people in a support group, to like look for the more subtle signs.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can tell you this, Leo. 2017 into 2018 were pretty much the bleakest parts for me. And I was absolutely killing bottles. But to what you said, for me, it was, there were days where I just throw some fucking food at my cat and I felt like I just conquered the universe. Like that's all I got today. I poured cat food in that bowl, laid some water out, and back to the bottle I go, you know? And it's just the substance abuse is, God, it's so fucked for depression. And it makes so much sense because, of course, you know, maybe I'll be under the table before I'm over you, but it's just the worst possible fucking idea. Yeah.
I was told once chemicals medicate pain. And I was told that from my counselor in my DUI classes. And he would say it every single session. And like when you first get there, you know, you don't give a shit about anybody. You have to be there. You don't really want to learn anything. You don't think that you have a problem, whatever. But I was pretty fucking drunk when I got pulled over. So I had to be there for significantly longer than most cats. And he would say it every day. And then like I started to think about that. And chemicals do medicate pain. They numb it, but they don't make it go away. And I know this is something that we kind of talked about throughout the week that we were going to kind of cover when we got into this topic is, you know, numbing versus actually getting in there, putting the Band-Aid on, and actually going through healing. And sometimes that can be a lot harder than perpetuating the cycle because if you're going to go into it sober, you've got to take a look at the piece of shit that you've been for the last couple of days. And, you know, some people don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Adam says, it's sometimes it's hard to even look at yourself in the mirror. So what are some of the things that you guys do when you realize that maybe you're getting into a negative state of mind? Like, how do you protect yourself from that without hitting the bottle or sleeping all day or throwing food at your cat, you monster?
You want to lead it off, Foley?
Sure, man. I mean, obviously, we all know that science has proven exercise is fantastic if we could but rally. The brain chemicals that are released directly lead to a physical feeling of happiness, you know? And it's just, even if it's just for that hour, that's 1 hour you weren't like seeping back into darkness. You know what I mean? Sobriety certainly should be pursued. Fucking mindfulness, practicing mindfulness, thinking through your feelings, as Leo was talking about, like just being alone with yourself, which is the person we hate most of the time. So getting to know that person and being okay with not being okay, figuring out how to get through it. Like one of the biggest lessons for me over the past 3 years of my life is dwelling in reality in the moment. Like if you're dwelling in the past where I have spent so way too much time, or in the future, like either pasting or future tripping, you got 1 foot in the past, 1 foot in the future. Both are causing fear or remorse, and you're pissing all over the present. And so that's something for me that has been huge. Like, be present in this moment. What are you feeling? You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's been big for me.
The past is only for lessons, man. You should only dwell back there to smile at a memory or re-go over a lesson. You can't hold yourself accountable for things you can't change.
Sure.
No. Yeah. No, that's.
What about you, Adam?
I just want to take a moment to say to see the change in Paul over the last couple of years has been amazing. He's come a long way.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you have, man. I remember when I first saw you, I thought you were a fucking douche. And now I know you're one.
Yeah, beyond all
but
that.
You're our douche, god damn it.
Yeah, you're our douche. Anyway, so for me, I have a multifaceted, multi-layered way of dealing with things. I like to get all my negativity, all my fears, all my sadness, and I like to put it in a little ball and just tuck it inside myself and never talk about it, and then let it fester. Actually, no, that's not what I do. I've actually been pretty much sober since March 24th, 2017. I think that was the last time I actually drunk to excess where I was actually drunk, which was actually the night that I actually got to meet Aisha face-to-face for the first time. And I've stayed sober. I figured she can't escape me if I stay sober and I'm at my, you know, paramount and ready to spring on her all the time. But seriously, I even to this day, I don't consider myself a non-drinker. I just don't really find the reason to be drinking. I find other ways to do it. And drinking was one of the biggest things that would bring you down. You'd be like, fuck. It would just, day would turn into night. Night would turn into day. Yeah. Nothing at all done. And it just become habitual, pretty much. I didn't like drinking. It was just habitual. So, you know, and then you'd be seeking that that affirmation, that positive feedback on like Facebook from people who don't really fucking matter at all. Like, you know, they're not really in your life. You just want that feedback to make yourself feel better, and you become like this fucking attention wanting thing, which is my problem. But
yeah, and it's easy to hide.
Yeah.
You know, you can hide your negativity. All the bad shit that's going on in your life with a positive Facebook post, you could be a total fucking train wreck and still look happy and go lucky on Facebook.
You guys have heard me say it. Like there were times for a damn selfie post or something like that where I had to move enough of my evidence of depression, whether it's week old fucking pizza boxes or, I mean, just let your mind wander. You're probably not far off. And just there's me in front of a patch of bare wall and boop, let me get this selfie, boop, just because like I can look like I've got shit squared away and shit was melting into the floor. Like I was,
it's giving people that window that there's something okay. And so what I've found has worked for me and might not work for everyone has been exercise. You know, for a long time, as soon as I got a negative thought or a negative feeling, I'd go to the gym. I'd just go and fucking work that out until I got that serotonin released and felt better about myself and, you know, just pounded myself into the ground in that way. Another thing that's really helped me has been helping others. Sometimes when you make yourself available and open to people who are going through some shit, it puts your stuff in perspective. And
oh, it's huge.
It does. It's huge. It quells your own demons. You're like, fuck, yeah. I'm sad because, you know, I'm missing $5 out of my account. This motherfucker has cancer. You know, it puts everything in perspective for you. Which, you know, helping people, you know, people say that we're, you know, it's a selfless thing we do by helping all these people, but in a lot of ways, helping others really helps us.
You know, I definitely agree with that. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, just in response to Adam's kind words from earlier, like, your metamorphosis and transformation has been amazing. Like, you have literally beaten your body and chiseled that shit. And it's impressive to all of us to see the transformation you have undergone.
I've basically gone from looking like a soup sandwich to looking like a piece of soup toast. Pretty much.
Crispy golden brown soup toast.
Crispy golden brown with Vegemite on it. Listening. I don't know about you guys, but another thing that really helps me and always has is cooking. I love to cook. And, you know, you're creating something in the kitchen, you're following that recipe, and you get something good out of it. Have you guys
There's nothing like watching somebody's face when they bite into something that you made for them. I can totally relate.
Hell yes. There's a virtue to cooking for sure. It's just,
So cooking was a big help, exercise, helping others. Another tip I've always given people has been keep a notebook next to your bed. And when you're laying there and all these thoughts are swelling around your head, write them down, write everything down, get it all out and go through it. What can I solve and fix right the fuck now? Am I shitty? Am I sad because my house is a mess? Okay. I'll go clean that motherfucker right now. You can do that. Right. Am I sad because I don't have a job at the moment? Well, I can't do anything about that right now because it's 3 a.m. I look like a psycho if I go down there looking for a job now. So, and also small wins. If you set yourself some small targets, like be it, I'm going to make my bed today, I'm going to brush my teeth, and I'm going to have a shower. You fucking kick all those goals, you complete those tasks, you do more the next day, and that's how you get yourself back out there. It's just finding the wins and getting them done.
Huge.
You want to change the world, make your...
You only walk like 10 millimeters. If you've walked 10 millimeters, at least that's 10 millimeters forward. You know?
Yep. It's a quote. I don't remember what book it's from, but it's, if you want to change the world, start with making your bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, and, you know, it's amazing. Now, Leo, what about you?
Yo. All right. Despair. So I guess I'll tell you of the most disparaging time in my life before I get into some of the things I do to fix it. And, you know, I kind of see myself going down a little bit of a negative path, so I'll get into that too. But all right. So we'll go back to 2011. I had just gotten back from combat deployment in Afghanistan. I was in the pinnacle shape of my life. You know, my whole unit came back. Everyone was fine. We went over there. We did what we had to do. And we just felt like gods among men, like 10 foot tall and bulletproof. Like nothing the world could throw at us would stop us. So we came back and we were on a post-deployment leave. And one of my friends that I served with over there flew up from Texas. And we were spending a week of post-deployment leave together. And well, you know how it is when you got a friend from out of town. You want to try and show them everything that's cool in your neck of the woods because, right. You know, you hope your homie, like, moves out there or something someday. And, I mean, we did a lot of vehicle patrols in Afghanistan, so it was nothing to be awake for 48, 72 hours, no sleep, and just drive. But, what I failed to realize was the fear of dying constantly but boosts your adrenal glands and keeps you awake. So I was about a mile and a half from my house.
We were finishing up hanging out with some of my friends, and we were coming out to grab some fishing poles, and I was going to take them up to a mountain lake, and I fell asleep behind the wheel. So I rolled the truck 4 times. I got ejected 80 meters, and I burst fractured my L4 vertebrae into 37 pieces. And that was pretty shitty, but like I was conscious and everything. But the scariest part was my best friend was unconscious, and I thought that I killed him. So I laid there, and everything hurt in my abdomen. And I was like, okay, well, I'm alive. I must have just broken my ribs. So I was lucky. The first people that actually arrived on scene were a couple of off-duty first responders. And when they got there, I was up and walking around trying to find my friend. So naturally, they tackled me to the ground, wouldn't let me move, told me I was an idiot for trying to stand up. And they found Aaron, said he was okay. He was just non-responsive, but his vitals were good. So I wound up breaking his back too. His fracture was significantly less bad than mine, which I'm thankful for. But anyway, so we get to the hospital, and they find out that my spine is fucking shattered. And I go out for 3 days. So 3 days later, I come to, and I'm in a hospital bed. First thing I do, wiggle my toes. That's cool. Look around, make sure I still have hands and everything. And then I made sure my dick worked. So I was like, all right, Well, nothing can be that bad, right? And all right, good to go. So, you know, I started to see my friends and family and stuff. And the doctor, he came in, and I'll never forget this. He wheels up and he leans his chair back. He's a weird guy. And he puts his feet up on like where my feet are up. He puts his hands behind his head, and he looks at me. He's like, "You believe in God?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Well, cool. Thank him, not me. You're a lucky son of a bitch." And he just got up and walked out. And that's actually how I got my nickname, was they told me I'd never walk again without a cane. And I started crying. And my grandmother's like, "Don't listen to that. You're going to rise like the Phoenix." So if anybody ever wants to know why my nickname's Phoenix, there it is. You know, everything was still really positive in the hospital. I was like, okay, I got this. 21 years old, just turned. I think I'd been 21 for 11 days. I went from being one of the toughest, most hard-boiled sons of bitches on the face of the planet to it was all I could do to get out of bed, walk to the hospital room door, and walk back. I had to completely learn how to walk again. Wow. You don't really have time to get upset, disappointed, or anything in the hospital. It's very regimented. It's not how it works. So, you know, 5 days later, I got to see Aaron. He was doing okay. Everybody was all right. The Marine Corps really took good care of me. They're like, "You were under orders to be on leave, so whatever happens to you, we got the tab." So I was really thankful for that. But despair didn't start until 2 months later when I got released and I had to go home. And I laid there for 6 months on the couch. The farthest I could go was the mailbox. And, you know, everyone would stay or they'd make time to come see me and stuff like that. But after a while, life's got to go on. And I was healing on my own. And that's when I started taking too many of my painkillers, started drinking too much. And I thought that was it. I thought that life was over. Now, I was never suicidal, never anything like that. I was too apathetic to want to kill myself. I was like, "What's the fucking point? I'm already dead." So it took a really, really long time. The first thing that I realized was I needed to get off the painkillers, because that's one of the things that contributed to my mother's death. So one day I woke up and I think I drank like 15 beers and took 2 Dilaudid, and I woke up in my own piss, and I was just like, okay, well, this is done.
Yeah.
So I got off the painkillers, and I got off the drinking, but, I mean, the feelings and stuff didn't go away. And that was when Aaron, because, I mean, a lot of it was guilt for what I did to him, because I changed his entire fucking life. He came in, and he forgave me. And so... He was like my martial arts buddy. He was my guy. And so we really leaned on each other. We stopped drinking together, and we did, you know, what everybody does. Started with some physical exercise. And then slowly but surely things started getting better. But I still couldn't do a whole lot. And thank God for social media, right? I would sit there and I've always had a bunch of Facebook friends. I don't know them all, but I would just scroll through and I would find somebody that was posting some negative shit, having a bad time. And I would just randomly message them. And I made it a point every day to try and find somebody who was having a bad time and just make a positive influence on their life. Because what I realized, and we talked about it last week, was without purpose, that's when we start to slide into despair. I wasn't going to be out PTing with the boys. I wasn't doing any of the machine gun ranges, or I couldn't be a Marine to the fullest extent of being a Marine at that point. That wasn't my purpose at that time in life. So I needed to find something else. And it was small, man. I couldn't tell you half the names of the people that I would hit up randomly, but, and they'd always say thank you and talk about being selfless. But I told them straight up, I would always say, I'm doing this as much for me as I am for you. And I think that purpose is huge. I think that you could be the happiest guy or girl, have everything going in your life. But if you fall into monotony, if you fall into too much of a routine and you lose sight of your purpose, that slope can be as steep as any cliff you've ever walked up to, man. And it can happen quick.
Wise words, man.
And then, like Adam says, I got into writing too. And I would, originally I would burn my writing. It was kind of like symbolic for me. I've got a thought. It's keeping me awake. It's trapped. So I would write it down and I would release it by burning it. So I absolutely agree with you, Adam. Writing is huge.
Yeah, man, that's amazing.
Regarding the writing, it reminds me of some good counsel I received along the way, which was like, my head is just a jumbled mass of really fast moving tangled yarn. And so speaking it out for me allows me to speak like a single strand of that yarn out. And it comes out in a straight line and is more easily recognizable and understandable. So the same with writing, like to write those thoughts out, it just untangles the yarn, you know?
Yeah. It gives something validity. It's like knowing the name of a demon.
Right. Exactly.
What is the quote? You know, inside my head I hold 3 madmen, a monster. Is it from Alice in Wonderland?
I don't know, but I'm liking it.
You know the one?
Yeah, I don't know it. Don't you? Inside...
Yeah. I'm going to have to find it out. But Leo, I just want to say real quick, that for me, I'm sure it was all, is the first time I've heard that story. And I'm shocked. I'm in awe. I'm amazed by you, man. I'm just thankful you're still here with us, and I love you, man.
Absolutely.
Hey, man. I love you guys too. And I think that's one of the things that ties us together as tightly as it does, is we've all been through some, and the thing is it's not just us. We've just gotten to the point in our lives where we can talk about it, but we've all been through some shit, and it gives us the opportunity to bond as people. And I think that's why networking and what we try to do with V14 and everything is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
So one thing that I think we should talk about, and because we've been trying to figure out how we tie relationships into an episode, and I think that what we'll wind up doing is we'll probably wind up tying in different parts to whatever is relevant to what we're speaking about, but I think maybe we should sit and talk about people who self-medicate through the emotions of others through their own despair.
Yes. 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 Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think it can be a spillover danger with even the goodness of helping someone. When people can seek to absorb or take too much responsibility into someone's pain, rather than just being empathetic and sympathetic and meeting them where they're at and offering wise counsel or just a listening ear. But when too much responsibility is taken upon oneself inappropriately, you know, it's like you are in no way responsible, but yeah, that can be a danger zone spillover.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I've noticed is it's almost like drinking, you know, you'll see people who jump from relationship to relationship for self-worth, you know, for that's their validation is being with somebody, but they don't take the time to heal right. And so they look for that in others. And I mean, once a relationship like that isn't ever going to survive the first argument, because you've already got so much going on in your world that something pretty insignificant could be the stone that just causes the tidal wave, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And it's not fair on either part. Like, it's not fair on the new person you're getting the relationship with. Like, you see so many people, males and females, saying, you know, oh, fucking Jimmy, whoever, was a piece of shit. You know, they had so many issues. They had these dramas. They were just argumentative. Couldn't get along. It could be the fact that you brought a lot of your own baggage with you into those things. Like,
yeah.
You can't expect to get your 100% perfect person when you're only running at 25% yourself. You know,
spot on. Yeah.
But that's why, you know, after my marriage dissolved and all that sort of thing, I spent like a year pretty much fucking Jolin monking it. Didn't have sex with any, but pretty much just monkeying it and having nothing to do with any females that I could actually form a relationship with, because I wanted to be better. I wanted to be at the place where if I found the person that I deserved, I could be at my best, give the best person I could, give them the best.
Right.
Yeah, you want to find the person you deserve, but, you know, that's a two-sided coin. They deserve a certain version of you as well. And so for people listening to this, I think that it's important that you take a little bit of time. Maybe it doesn't have to be every day, but just a couple of times whenever the world's quiet or whatever, and have some introspection and try and look at yourself objectively. And, you know, the biggest thing is if you find that you're emotionally lacking something, well, knowing the problem's great, but then you have to decide what you're going to do constructively to work on that. And that's something, I mean, if you've got a partner, that's great, because communication is huge. You know, you need to just sit down and talk with them and let them know where you're at. Or it's something that you can do on your own, too. And I've always been a firm believer in having together but separate lives. Like, you have to have things that you like to do, outlets for you. So I think that's important to consider too. Maybe if things aren't working out, if you're feeling trapped or whatever, you got to have something that you can go do. And, you know, every relationship should have a level of trust to where you could go out and do something independently.
Yeah. Well, and regarding the relational talk, it's so important to remember. I know loneliness is such a difficult thing. It's difficult to be alone, specifically when we are navigating depression and despair, but it's just so healthy to know ourselves, specifically considering when we're in a depressed spot or a despairing spot with all the negative focus, it's going to lead to unhealthy codependency, jumping into some bullshit. Clearly, we're not in a spot in those moments for a healthy mindset anyway, so why the fuck would we be thinking we possess the clarity to ponder rightly? Like, it's just in those moments, we just need to chill, difficult though it be, because a 100% can confirm and have jumped into things I ought not to have just because, oh, wow, I don't feel so lonely. Well, yeah, that's going to go poorly eventually.
And I think that that's where like self-honesty and communication is huge. Like everyone wants to find their fucking notebook marriage or whatever, but the fact of the matter is there's varying degrees of relationships. Like,
right.
You don't have to, everyone wants to jump in and be so goddamn serious right away and they don't enjoy the time or the process. Like everybody moves too fast. And I think it has a lot to do with instant gratification and just how society is now. You can get whatever you want with the snap of a finger or a click of a mouse. But that's not the way things always were. So slow down and enjoy it. And, you know, you can still have that codependency and build it slowly and positively. But like what Paul's saying is when you jump right into something, it's like jumping into a river and you can't see the bottom. Well, if you break both of your goddamn ankles.
From a spot of depression. Yeah.
Exactly. Paul, you had something that you, I mean, not Paul, Adam, you had something that you wanted to say.
Yeah, man. What I was going to say was like a new relationship. It's like going on a road trip. Like it's fun. It's exciting. You're going somewhere new, but you don't go on a fucking road trip when you've only got a quarter tank of gas, you know, and
sure.
How you are, you've got to make sure your tank is full because there's going to be fucking flat tires. You're going to get hit by a fucking cassowary on the way. Shit's going to go sideways, you know, in a relationship.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds serious.
It's like it's a dinosaur bird. It's the most fearsome bird in the world. Fucking,
Adam fights three a day.
I actually that's what I do for cardio. I get chased by cassowaries.
I want you to capture one and send it to me.
I'm gonna fuck a cassowary for you. And
perfect.
I think what we'll do is we'll throw a cassowary up on the Instagram just so people can see a cassowary.
Hell yeah,
absolutely. And let's make a point to make sure that we get that quote that you were talking about earlier. Sorry to cut you off, Adam, but let's just for all of our listeners, if we mention something, if you guys shoot over to and like if it's a quote and we don't know it or who it was written by or whatever, we're going to start doing our show notes over on our Instagram page. So anything that we need to double back to or something like that, we'll have it posted over there either on a picture or in the comments. So if something that we says needs to be elaborated on, we'll do it after the show over there. All right, Adam, sorry.
Yeah, so, like, someone once said, Paul has herpes, and you have to get that quote up as well.
Unknown.
It's unknown, uncredited. But, yeah, you've just got to be ready to put up with the shit that comes with a relationship. Like, you never know what's going to happen, and what you said, it's like jumping into a fucking river can't see the bottom of, and you can't swim, and you got one floaty that's half fucking flat.
Yeah.
That you fix with scotch tape.
Yeah. And bubble gum.
Motherfuckers.
Oh, fuck. All right, that's it.
You know what? I got something I want to touch on.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
This is, just because I happen to know some people specifically who have reached out and they have discussed the faith-based perspectives in depression as well. And so I know like that's certainly not everyone. So if people need to tune out, they could tune out, but I will say this having
dealt
with
it myself, covered it.
Due to my,
they don't like it. Fuck them. It.
But, for people I know who they take a faith-based approach to life and they pursue, you know, prayer, and stuff like that regarding depression, regarding difficulty. There can be a very, very negative effect from when they're already in depression, despair sets in, and then it turns to even God has abandoned me because my prayers have not been answered because things don't look the way I feel they should or the way I suppose they would.
Paul,
I just want to take,
I will have you know.
Yeah.
That my relationship with God has never been the same since I broke my back because of exactly what you just described.
Roger.
Yeah. I would say it broke my faith. So you are absolutely right.
Well, the thing is, I just want to, I want to encourage people in those moments when they feel like their prayers were unanswered because things didn't look how they felt it should. I wonder how Joseph felt in the damn Egyptian prison for fucking years, or David being pursued by the king's army through the mountains of Judea, or Jesus hanging on a friggin' cross. Like, God, if you believe in him, he is certainly not a pussy. So, if there is difficulty, he will stand with you through it. But I would challenge you and I would encourage you, all is not lost because things don't look like you think they should. I say that to the people who, having dealt with it myself, a faith-based philosophy that could leave you feeling more broken, more lost, and more empty and abandoned. It's like, I guess, you know, just press through. Fucking press through.
Yeah.
You're strong, you got this.
My grandmother's
not been abandoned.
My grandmother's preacher once said that God reserves his toughest tests for his strongest soldiers.
Come on, man. Yeah. So that was that. I just wanted to touch on it, knowing some people that have literally reached out in Messenger and been like, I feel like my prayers aren't answered. Even God has abandoned me. And it's like, come on. That ain't a thing.
Come on.
Let's fucking rain drop. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm not getting a whole lot of messages on what's going on, but if you guys ever get anything, by all means, fire it off. We got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, buddy.
I had some messages earlier in the week, and they they pertain to you. They actually pertain to you, Leo.
Oh God.
they wanted to know your stance on pegging.
On pegging. You know, it's funny you say that because one of my homegirls, we've been friends for probably 13 years, and she called me up the other night and she was going through a rough spot. She just split up with her her boyfriend, and I've got a truck, so she needed help moving. Well, she was drunker than a skunk. And she was trying, like, you know, the why me shit. And so we were sorting through the why me maze, and she stops mid-sentence and she's like, you want to know what? And I was like, what, Matt? And she's all, he wanted to take the dirt road home, and I told him that he couldn't touch my butt unless I fucked him. So I fucked him with a 9-inch strap on, and he liked it. So <Yeah. laughs> my opinion on pegging, not for me, but whatever the fuck you degenerates are into, by all means, find somebody who will rock and roll with it, and you do you.
Well, this sort of leads into a thing that I had with a certain female in my life who, quite a while, her name was Aisha. Did I just say that?
Stone cold called out.
Yeah, I'm going to put that motherfucker, I threw it right under that motherfucking cassowary bus. So, quite a while, she was like, Adam, I want to put my fingers in your ass. And I was like, no, fuck no. And then,
why is that a thing? Why?
I think it's trying to you know, put us down a patch and make us into their bitches, I think. Or they like the smell of shit.
Oh, they want to take us down with a peg?
Yeah, take it down a peg. Anyway, so I considered, let me gather you all around and I will give you this conversation. So over the period of time, she probably asked me at least a good dozen times. Usually when we were getting some adult time, if you know what I mean. Anyway.
You mean like having sex?
Yes, Paul, having sex.
Okay, to clarify. I didn't know adult time. It could have been just like, you know,
We were in prayer group.
You were making the sex.
Paul said sex.
We were making the herpes-free sex.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Must be nice.
So here we are. Not everyone can get it. Anyway. So I ran a risk assessment. I was like, Aisha has, I'll have to put a photo of it up. She has tiny hands. I mean, tiny fucking hands. Like, I don't know. Like, that's a big reason why I'm with her is because my tiny dick actually looks normal in her hand. That's how tiny her hands are.
It's important.
You understand that? Anyway, so finally we get to this point where I'm at, okay, I will let you finger my ass. So I'm like, I'm going to take this like a champion.
Bear in mind, Adam's pretty much sober these days.
Oh, yeah, I'm sober as fuck. I'm sober as fuck. So I was like, it's a sober, dry butthole. So I was like, who am I going to try and be like as I get this in the ass? So I went, William Wallace. Mel Gibson in Braveheart was not a bitch when he got his guts torn out. So I tried to be William Wallace. So I got on my stomach and I let her go for it. She's got a, I'll say two fingers, she'll say one, but she's got a finger up there. Felt like a fucking fist. She's got a finger up there.
Did you yell freedom?
I was like, fucking bring it on. I was trying to make her like it. I'm pushing back on it. All that sort of thing. And she got,
you reverse cowgirled Aisha's finger?
I reverse cowgirl, even looked over my shoulder and bit my lip and everything. And I even called her mummy. I said, yeah, you fucked my ass, mummy. Anyway,
I want to go home.
We get 42 seconds into this, and Aisha goes to me after asking for months if she could do it. She goes, can I stop now? I don't like it.
And How did you feel after that?
Well, I felt good because I figured she wouldn't like it. But you know what women are like? He keeps saying, no, no, they keep asking. So I took that 40 seconds of ass pounding from her with her tiny fingers, and to this day, she's never, ever asked to explore, play Dora the Explorer in my butthole.
Yeah. Swipe or no swiping.
Same map.
She had to do a lot of wiping after it fell off, you know. Fucking. That hangs around like herpes.
Oh, so glad that happened.
Now, I wish it didn't.
While we're in this region of butts and stuff, Paul. Mm.
Yeah.
What's your butt number? Like, how much would someone have to pay you, be a man, put his penis in your butthole? Like, what are you charging?
I may have just lost audio.
What he was saying is that he's really hoping it. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Yeah, repeat the question.
Paul, what is your butt number? So what would a man have to pay you to pound your asshole via a GoFundMe?
I remain strictly chickly, contrary to popular belief. So I'm going to say $33,178.
That's a very exact number.
It's the amount left to pay off my truck.
The thing is, I'm thinking that's a very obtainable number for us. I think we can do it.
Hey, no GoFundMes in the group, motherfuckers.
Yeah, none. Those are against the rules. I have always said, like, because, you know, women like to, you know, joke about pegging and everything. And like, every time it was ever brought up, I've always been like, okay. Like, I've heard that the whatever those, you know, orgasms are called through the butt are really amazing. So, like, I'm down to try if you use the small toy. And then everyone's like, ha, Pop Smoke. Like, no one's ever about it. Like, when it's time to be about it, no one is ever about it.
Paul, I know at least one girl that would do it. So you be careful with that.
I'm just saying, they always want to talk like all huge. Like, it's like Janie Badass. Like, oh, I'm hardcore. I talk about pegging. It's like, no, you don't.
That's like a bitch that wants you to choke him.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, okay. Everyone wants to be a rock star till it's time to do rock star shit. And then they're like, you know, I'm gonna leave.
Everyone wants to be a fucking airborne ranger CIA mercenary until you find out he's actually a meth head from Arkansas.
There he goes.
Ooh, boom. So we've covered butt stuff. We found out Paul would be very cheap to fuck in the ass.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Just over 30 grand.
Just over 30 grand. Like, that's nothing. That's not even the house deposit. I know where I want to see us get. All right, so what are we going to move on to next?
I don't know. I think that we've moved from serious into debaucherous, and Adam, I'm going to let you host the debaucherous portion of this podcast.
Get it?
Well, hey, okay. Well, I think we play a little game, a real quick game that since there's three of us here, and there's four of us in the four horsemen, hence the name. That's why it's four horsemen, not five. So, Paul, I'm going to start with you and then move into Leo, and then one of you can ask me, because I'll go last because, well, you know, I'm last. Paul.
Okay.
Marry, fuck, kill out of your co-hosts on the Four Horsemen. Who are you going to marry, fuck, and kill out of me, Gannicus, and Leo? And why, motherfucker?
Huh. I was not prepared for this. All right. I'm gonna marry Leo because he would be such a virtuous partner in this life. I'm gonna fuck Adam because I know his asshole's so tight because Aisha's little fingers just were too much for him.
And
I'm gonna kill Gannicus's sex drive. I'm just gonna wear him out. I'm gonna put him over sideways. I'm gonna bend him over a barrel and show him all 50 states. I'm gonna be like, you see that one, motherfucker? That's Rhode Island. That's the small one. Like this dick.
Ohio, Passover state.
Check out the green belt.
That's Nebraska. It's got a lot of corn, which it feels like you're running backwards through right now.
on this cob.
Oh yeah, you butter that dick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Now moving on, Paul. They are all fantastic answers, and I thank you for your time and your consideration on that. Now.
Yes. Welcome.
Mr. Stewart. Same question to you that our co-host just made.
All right. Well, let's see here. Well, I'm going to have to marry Paul because if I fuck him, I'm going to have herpes. And, well.
It's the life.
Wise words, my friend. Wise words.
But before I marry Paul, Adam, I'm going to have to take you to Pound Town.
Oh, yeah.
And, well.
So hard.
I don't know. I would. I can't kill Gannicus. He's tougher than I am. So maybe I'll fight Gannicus first, die, and then I won't have to worry about fucking either one of you.
That's a good answer.
Try and keep it as straight as I possibly can. About as straight as a windy road. Right. All right, Adam.
Okay. Here we go. You ready? I've pondered this question and thought about it way more than I should.
I think that I believe you.
You guys know what I was doing to prepare for this show, don't you? Getting that tension up.
I do.
Okay. All right. Here it is. I'm marrying Leo because, well, he's just going to be a good provider and the sort of man that, you know, if I'm going to be gay, it's going to be with Leo, right?
Okay. Of course.
He just brings so much to it. And I'm fucking Gannicus just because like a dirty French novel, you know, it's going to be some dirty fucking life-changing sex. And then when Leo pisses me off, I'll say, it doesn't matter. I fuck Gannicus. So that's going to be fun. My dear sweet
There's nothing
Paul.
I can do about it.
My dear sweet Paul, I haven't forgotten you. I But I'm killing you for the good of mankind because we're stopping the spread of dick fog and super herpes. So really, you're the hero.
It must have.
You're doing everyone a favor. It's a public service.
It is. It is. It is. Like, I can't fuck you. I can't marry you because then Aisha's mom will be jealous. So I've got to kill you.
Oh, shit. Aisha's mom. Has she said anything about me lately?
She said that poorly. He's funny. And she was hoping you would.
The funny thing about his humor. The funny thing about Paul's humor is it's located on his cock.
Oh, fuck. I just really hope I get to call Paul dad.
You first of all, understand. You better tell Aisha's sweet mom that I said hello, and you better understand I'm going to take you for ice cream as soon as possible.
Oh,
my perfect son.
Yeah. Oh, see, that just made my heart flutter a little bit. And now this feels, this feels so much more poetic when I actually kill you now.
Yeah.
I just want to.
I want fucking ice cream.
Yeah, meatloaf and ice cream. Oh, all right. Now, we're in the state of debauchery at the moment, which seems to be somewhere where I come in. So I think.
Like a stiff breeze and dick fog.
We're lost in that fucking debauchery. I'm running in the dicks everywhere. Paul.
Yes.
We've discussed some of your fables, some of your stories, some of your legends. I think this would really be a good time for us to discuss something odd that we've put in, something probably not odd, but non-traditional that we may have put inside a woman's hee-hee, her vagina.
Her cuckoo.
Her cuckoo. Yeah. Paul, what have you put inside a woman other than your member or fingers or the more traditional things? And tell us how it went down.
So
I love
I
this
may
story.
Have had a buddy, and he shared a story one time about his experience, and when I heard it, I was like, this is not only a goal, it's an expectation. So he had shared about toe fingering a lady that he was with, and as soon as I heard it, it was a life goal. So there was one time in the depths of history, in the annals of history, or anals, if you will, where mid blowy, I attempted to put my toe in the vagina of the lady.
Did you trim your toenail first?
Ooh, yes.
The toenails were trimmed because I keep that shit pretty, like, you know, like it's squared away.
So this was premeditated.
Yeah, he
toenails were trimmed, totally premeditated toe fingering, and I put my big toe in her vagina.
So you got the big toe in there.
It was there. It was definitely, it was massaging the labia. It was like, it wasn't like, we're not talking deep in. I wasn't reaching for a G spot. It was just like the toe was there. It was inside.
Dude, I can never reach for a G spot. If the woman's vagina was like alphabet, I'm stuck around B. So
I wear a size 14 and a half double wide. I'd be toe bumping her cervix.
Fuck out. Oh, fuck. What was her reaction? What was her reaction when you put your toe in her vagina? Like, she'd be looking at you going, his hands are there, his dick's in my mouth. What the fuck's inside me?
There was not much response in the moment, but relative laughter later, which I understood there was laughter. And yeah, I guess it was just one of those, oh, geez. Oh, goodness, that happened, huh?
Oh, that Paulie.
Yeah. Oh, that toe fingering motherfucker. Oh, goodness me.
Here's a question. Did you get a re-rod invitation after that, or was she like, fuck that shit?
That was the last time. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a lesson.
No, there was no follow up.
Look away, children. Look
away. I want to go home. I'm home already, but after hearing that story, I want to go home.
like Homer again.
I once, you know, the things you put toilet rolls on, you stack mm-hmm. toilet rolls on. That like, basically, it was a lump of wood. I once put a lump of wood up a chick's vagina.
Oh,
why?
How did that go?
My vagina. You know, it's like when some motherfucker. It's like when some fucker breaks into your house and you'll pick anything up as a weapon to fucking fight them off. Like, vagina. It was like a snapping.
Yeah, why don't you tell us that story?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. This vagina is coming at me. So the first thing I could reach for was a toilet roll. canister, and I shoved that into this snapping turtle vagina to hold it at bay. And I was like, ooh, hold the fuck on there. Yeah, yeah. It was like one of those snapping gumboot turtles. All right.
Adam, I have a question.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Have you ever knocked a woman out with an alarm clock?
That seems like a very, very specific question, Paul.
One might even say loaded.
I could say with an alarm clock, the answer would be no, sir. However, with a clock radio combination, mm-hmm, I may have knocked a bit out. Now, we're not talking any little alarm clock with like the little bells and whistles on the side, you know, the little fucking wind up fucking thing. We're talking one that plugs into the wall and plays sick beats while also telling you what time it is and waking you up in time to go to work. So
we're talking about like one of those blocky things from the 1980s, right?
Yeah, yeah, one of those motherfuckers. If you look on the Instagram, there'll be one there later. Anyway, so here I am. I'm in my restful slumber, sleeping away. And, you know, I'm awoken by the noise at my window of someone taking my, we call them fly screen. So the window screen, you know, between the window and the outside so fucking bugs can't fly in. What do you guys call it?
Screens.
Just screens.
Screens. Just okay, straight good. Up. See, that's how Australians are. We make things very elaborate. So, you know, that screen is to stop a fly. That's a fly screen. That's a stubby holder.
I think down anyway. There, that's the fucking least of your worries.
Oh, it is. Right. Oh, it is. That's a cassowary screen.
I was going to say, does it stop a cassowary?
Fucking nothing can stop a cassowary. Not a thing. The cassowary is like pretty much the fucking what he would ride on. Like what a devil would ride on. Anyway.
I can't wait for you to send me one.
Ooh. Anyway, here I am. I'm asleep. It's 2 a.m. I hear the screen be taken off. And I'm not going to lie. I was a little bit excited about what was coming next. And I was like, I wish a motherfucker would. So it's about to go down. So I hear the window slide open. I roll out of bed with the stealth of a ninja. And I look what I can arm myself with. There's a few things. I have a replica sword from the motion picture 300. Can't use that. So instead, I find my alarm clock. Well, you know, I find that, I unplug. And I wait for this motherfucker to break into my house. And just as the head comes through the blinds and parts it, I swing this thing like Thor's hammer. Right? Right under this motherfucker. Fucking head, and it's glorious. There's the sound, the impact of something heavy on a skull, and the, you know, the thud, and then the body continues through with the forward momentum into my bedroom floor. There's broken bits of fucking clock radio everywhere. The 80s are fucking playing through the sound, yo. Fucking hungry like the wolf is going right now, yo. And I look down at my trophy of what I've just destroyed, thinking, you know, maybe. And I start to look, and the form looks very female-like and small. And it's at that point in time I realize there was actually a girl I'd been having casual sex with who'd decided to sneak through my bedroom window to give me a bit of a hey-hey, and I'd hit her the motherfucking fucked her day up. But at this stage, I'm like, fuck. She's starting to come too, so I have to quickly discard my clock radio underneath my bed and kick those bits and pieces under there. And she comes to and goes, what the fuck happened? And I was like, I don't know. I think you fell. Let me get you a taxi and send you home, not to the hospital, so if you die from a brain hemorrhage, it's in your house. So yeah, I knocked that motherfucker out.
That's why we use the front door.
Oh.
This is why we use the front door. This is why we say stuff before we come over, and you don't try and play these fuck games.
Oh, goodness.
Can you imagine if it had been the fucking sword, but if I had taken that head right off? Oh, God.
Would you still have slept with her afterwards?
Well, I probably would have fucked her, but I wouldn't have got a head job because, you know, there wouldn't have been any head. Oh, she would have been a real dead root anyway. Anyway. So now, Leo, being a Marine, I'm sure you've got some debaucherous stories you can tell us.
Oh, man, I wish I wasn't drunk for just about every sexual encounter I've ever had and past remembering, but I suppose I could tell you the story of when I lost my virginity. Ooh. So, all through high school and everything, I was a choir boy, man. Never was out too late, never broke any rules or anything like that. I didn't even have my first kiss until I was 18 and a half. But
no shit.
I was famous. Yeah, I know. I live out in the woods. And so I had a best friend whose older sister would buy us beer. And I had a pretty good job through high school. So I was pretty famous in my little area for always having a keg. So we would go up to what's called Stumpy Meadows Lake. And there's a huge, forestry development is all flat, and we'd have a huge bonfire. It was a lot of fun. So I went away to the Marine Corps, then came back for post-deployment leave, and we were, how old was I? I was like 19 and a half at this point. Still hadn't been late.
You're looking sexy.
So my truck was it, right? Yeah. So my truck was right next to the bonfire, and it was like my birthday party at the same time. It was a lot of fun. And this chick that I'd always kind of had a crush on in high school and I were talking, and I was like, well, about to go off to war. It's going to be metal as fuck, but I think I might die a virgin. And she looked over at me. She's like, you're a virgin? I was like, yep. So 3 or 4 cake stands later, she grabs me by my Dickies jacket, pulls me into the bed of my truck, which, like I said, is probably 5-10 feet away from the firelight in the center of the party, and I've got 130 of like my closest fucking friends there. So without further ado, she yanks my fucking trousers down, gives me the best 15 seconds of my life while literally the entire community that I grew up in is cheering me on. And at the end of that 15 seconds, I climbed to the cab of my truck, still with my jeans around my ankles, threw my hands up in the air and screamed at the world that I am now a man.
Yes.
It's been a slippery slope down ever since.
Spielberg couldn't have written that better.
Man, weird shit happens to me, Adam. Weird shit happens.
It is exactly what it should have been.
Oh, that is amazing.
Fuck, I guess.
It didn't matter.
What about you guys? First time stories?
Oh, well, it was quiet. I was cold. I was all alone. It was a cassowary. I'm trying to remember the first girl I fucked up. Like, I was 17. I was a late bloomer as well, probably because I had a fucking mullet. That could be why. I mean, I had a real good mullet, motherfucker. I had like shaved on top and long as fuck down the back. I was like Patrick Swayze as fuck. If I can find a photo of this mullet, it'll go on the gram.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So, Let's all do a senior year picture for the Instagram so everyone can see what we looked like when these girls were so kind to.
Paulie looked like Charlie fucking Tweeter from Varsity Blues. Hate that motherfucker. Well, anyway, let's just say I was 17. She was like 23 or something, 22. And she was fucked up. She was fucked up. Like, she did some weird, weird things to me, which kind of now led in the why I'm the way I am now, which I now see probably aren't normal. And that's sort of what sent me down to this downward spiral. So, yeah, right. It was, but you know, she was a bad looking chick. So, the way I got into that, if I fucked her, I could probably fuck other people without this mullet. So, I got rid of the mullet. I did that straight away. And surprisingly, not having a mullet actually made me more attractive to other people and more employable.
What?
Yeah. Now, Paul.
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Let's hear about your first time.
My first time is not an incredibly pleasant experience to recall. Actually,
oh my god.
Resulted. It was a sexual assault experience. It was not a cool thing. So.
Oh fuck.
That one is. Yeah, I was a late bloomer as well. I was 18, maybe 19. But it was its own thing. Took some getting over. Took some years, before even realizing, you know,
that fucking dick fog.
Yeah. The dick fog said yes, apparently, when I had not. Yeah.
Oh no.
So.
Oh no. That
do you think going through that? Yeah. Do you think going through that early on has like made you more of a receptive and a more compassionate lover?
Oh, bro, 100%. I literally was fucking a chick in February and she breathed out something that sounded like no, and I stopped with my penis inside her and I said, hey, was that a no? And she grabbed my hair and said, why the fuck would I say no? And so we finished.
And, but go, like, bitch, go.
Bro, when I say, like, literally, I am like so sensitive to fucking, yeah, just all that. Like, fuck that. Anyone ever feeling uncared for at all. Like, I can't fucking deal with that bullshit. So.
See, but that's awesome. Cause, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is like, even such a terrible negative experience can bring positivity if you look at it that way.
Yes, sir.
Sure.
It's all about how you choose to look at a situation.
Yes. 100%. And it's also amazing how our first sexual experiences sort of shaped us as men into what we are now. Like, Paulie is a very sensitive, caring, gentle lover. I'm fucked up in a lot of ways due to what this girl did to me, or central, by the way. And Leo just likes having sex in front of 130 people all the time for a couple of months.
I can't even get it up without an audience. What could I say?
That's what Leo does for his secondary job. He gets on a webcam and fucks things.
Phoenix Rising.
Rising so hard.
Oh, so hard. Oh, fuck, that's awesome.
The Phoenix Flamethrower.
That could, you might want to get a doctor to look at that. It's not meant to burn like that.
No, it's cool. Paul gave it to me.
Yeah, oh, after we got married. After, yeah.
Oh, dude. Is that herpes? No,
it's it's something else.
Something. Oh, the fucking
dick. Nobody knows what it is, but it's provocative.
And ever so arousing. Oh, fuck. Hey,
it's got its own musk.
I think this is probably for another show, another time, but I'm going to have to tell you guys about the time I jerked myself off using a deadening cream, a numbing cream.
Yeah. Oh, I just can't wait.
I got so mad at my dick because he wouldn't work.
Yeah. Did you know you were using deadening cream?
No, dude, because I found this thing. I found this clear liquid, a little thing of it, and I put it on my dick, and I was really horny. And in my mind, because it said analies, I was like, analies. So that's for easing a dick into someone's ass. So it's probably a lubricant. Yeah, so it was lubricant in my mind, and I put the motherfucker on there and started beating away, and it was great for the first couple of minutes. And then my dick started going floppy. And then so I switched up porn and went, because I was alone. So I went to something even more shocking. I went down that rabbit hole and went some really fucked up porn. And my dick was getting even floppier. And I was like, what the fuck? Why is this not working? And then my balls started going numb. Then I worked out that I'd actually used analies. And it took a very long time for my dick to come right. And I had the bluest balls in the world. Like, I beat that meat like it owed me money.
How long are we talking? Are we talking like noodle dick amount of time? Like, was it like 13 hours?
Oh, no. I mean for an atom long amount of time, so at least a good 7 minutes. I don't think I come quickly. I don't think I come quickly. I just think I have excellent time management skills, right? To the point of I actually base my whole sexual strategy on, this is going to be unpopular to say, but on the Nazi World War II, the Wehrmacht, on their
on their
war fighting technique. I call it lightning sex, so blitzkrieg sex.
Yeah.
So it's all about
the blitz sex.
Get there. Blitzkrieg sex, lightning war, lightning sex. So I get in there, and after 3 minutes, I've already had her in at least 12 different positions, and she's dizzy at this stage. She's disorientated, and she's like, "Oh, what the fuck." I'm making these weird noises. I've got a mask on, like a bulldog oversized mask. And next thing you know, I've got a scary clown one on. She's like, what the fuck? And she blanks out.
There's a cassowary in the corner.
There's a cassowary sitting there with its judgmental eyes, a hair in the time-space continuum opens. And, it's like fucking that. Doc Brown comes flying through in the fucking... Lorian, and then I come. We started at 8:05. It's now 8:08. Because I like sex at 8 o'clock. It's the perfect time.
That's how it really is. That's
it is. It's a pretty strong regimen.
Yeah,
dude, it's fucking.
You gotta have order.
Cardio, heart rate up. Now, I imagine Paul to be one of those long, lingering lovers.
Clearly you have not talked to anyone I've ever had sex with.
Well, it's... Leo was saying.
Hey, man, like I said, best 15 seconds of your life.
Yeah.
Paulie, how would you describe your sexual style?
My sexual style is mouth, penis.
What, yeah. Hold the fuck on. So...
Wait, no, that came out wrong. I mean, like, my mouth on a lady and then my penis inside a lady. Yeah, no.
I was so confused. I didn't know if your mouth on a penis or if penis has a mouth.
This has gone horribly sideways. Leo, I blame you for saying to start drinking at the start of the podcast. Fuck.
Hey, man, I'm just sitting over here with my mouth still open, praying to God a penis doesn't fall into it.
I'm going to fucking have nightmares tonight about Paulie's fucking penis mouth.
Fuck.
Brother, this is going horribly wrong. next time I'm having sex and the space-time continuum opens up, there'll be this flying penis mouth.
I will say, my goal is to oh god, I can't even focus right now.
Shit.
I try to reclaim something here before I end up sucking. All we've worked out so far is if you like a dick, it'll cost $33,000 to fuck your ass.
Oh shit.
That'd be the recap of this week's show. That's a synopsis. Anyway, yeah. I'll be quiet and I'll let you speak, Paul.
No, that just you asked me my sexual stylings. It is to actuate an orgasm with my mouth out of a vagina before
thank God
before having sex with said female. Yeah,
so you're not using your dick at all.
No, the dick goes in after the mouth vagina.
Oh. The mouth vagina? What the fuck?
Yeah, that way if he gets her to finish once, then it doesn't matter how long he lasts. Solid fucking strategy, sir.
Yeah. So my mouth, orgasm, and then 17 seconds.
I can actually, do you want me to let you in on a secret?
Obviously. Yeah.
It feels the same for you if she comes or doesn't come when you come.
I can't, like, I've heard dudes say that shit before, like, who the hell is that supposed to please? Me, bitch! You know, like, I've heard that line of logic, but I would rather, you know, a partner of mine...
Well, you don't get a lot of return customers that way.
Exactly.
You are correct there. You are very correct.
There we go.
You don't get invited back to the rodeo very often. Now,
yeah.
We've discussed my sexual styling. We've discussed Paul's sexual styling. Now, Leo, that leaves you.
Yo. All right, buddy.
Lighten us.
For me, it is 110% passion for me. I want that spontaneous, cannot keep your hands off of each other, slam against the wall type shit. Like lip biting. I mean, and I would say that like dominance is important, but like that's cool and all, but what I'm into is like the constant exchange of dominance. I think that's a lot of fun. Like you're empowered, she's empowered, you both have explosive fucking climaxes and call it good. And then I'm a cook. I make breakfast, dinner, lunch, whatever the fuck you're into.
Hey, I didn't know this was that kind of show. I fucking make breakfast too, goddammit.
Hey, there it is.
I make the waffles and the pancakes. But the problem is, when I finish having sex at 8:08 at night, it's a long time till breakfast, so that. So I have to bring snacks. So I'm pulling out some
chips
and some shit.
Goldfish.
Yep.
You want some juice? Some juice.
Passion and food, man.
Oh, God. I can tell you're going to be very happy about marriage, Leo.
Oh, Leo doesn't.
I ain't ever getting married again.
just trying to choke each other the fuck out to see who's going to get the dicking.
There it is, man. Hey, well, I may be a gentleman, but I'm a dirty bird too, all right? Like, I'll be the first to admit it.
Get it, boy. Yes.
Love there with that just dick mouth.
my dick mouth.
Yeah. Paul, don't ever fucking say that to me again.
Paul, can you see if you can put penis dick up on the Instagram for us?
So which mouth is? Describe dick mouth.
I want a picture of the penis dick mouth, what a penis would look like with a mouth on it.
We can come up with something.
Oh,
just like an X-ray photo. What are we doing here?
I believe the exact Maryland terminology was mouth dick.
Mouth dick.
Hey man, Manson, mouth. You could always hit up Marilyn Manson for some pointers.
Oh jeez.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh.
All right. Hey, Adam, did we get any more questions?
Well, not off the top of my head. I could probably remember some, but I have a question. Who would you guys rather masturbate to, Marilyn Manson or Hillary Clinton?
Oh, jeez.
Hillary Clinton before or after Benghazi?
Ooh, during. She wasn't doing fuck all else.
Oh, man, when you put it like that, I'm going to have to go with Marilyn Manson.
Yeah. Yeah, because it seems more challenging. Paul?
More challenging? Still has a chick's name.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. That can be worked through. I would fuck Hillary and then have a challenge in unsuiciding myself. You know.
Wow. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Staying alive. That's what I call that. That's the move when you fuck Hillary. It's called staying alive.
Oh, fuck. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to walk the line. All right. So we had some questions sent in last week from the listeners, all four of you. And one question was, are all guys fuckboys?
Oh, we say that one more time, Adam? I didn't hear it.
One of the questions that was posed last week was, are all guys fuckboys?
I would say that that question needs to be a little bit more in depth because we're men. Men are animals. And so we're always going to be driven by a strong need to breed because that's why we exist on the planet. I mean, it's society that's really added a bunch of other shit to the need to breed. So I would say that if it looks like things are headed that way, then we need to educate our young men and our young women a little bit more. I would say every guy has the potential to be a fuckboy, but it's more of a cultural and ethical thing.
Wow.
That's well said. I like well that. Stated.
Paul? We know you've been called a similar name a time or two before.
Yeah, so I will very unabashedly and very unashamedly say that I will unabashedly and unashamedly be single when I'm single. Right now, you men happen to know better than anyone else that I am unsingling myself and I'm quite happy to do so because it makes me quite happy and this person makes me amazingly happy, but
very lucky
like
man.
I am indeed, but as a single man, when there are posts with like titties everywhere and everything, it's like you get a heart react and you get a heart react and your titties are amazing and oh my gosh, I love all the titties. And it's just I don't give a fuck, like if you're beautiful, I'm gonna say you're beautiful, I'm gonna say all the ridiculous things and not feel bad about it. Like,
so is it fair to post an attention-seeking picture like that and then turn around and call everyone that shows you the positive feedback that you were, in fact, looking for in the beginning a fuckboy? Or did you kind of load that question? You know?
I think
like, what is your role? Instead of projecting...
It has to do with the posturing and the lying and when guys like fucking lie to chicks and that bullshit to where it's like, it's the posturing. So I can honestly say I've never exactly felt like a fuckboy, but I said what I said based on how women throw so much under that umbrella, like a dude who is affectionate.
And if somebody asks you,
got it. Thumbs up.
Yeah. And if some chick asks you, you know, where you're at with things, are you completely honest or are you kind of shady?
I am more honest now than I have been probably ever in my life, in my like dating.
Okay. But you're honest about it. So therefore, I don't think that constitutes you as a fuckboy. Like, no, I think that the level of truthfulness in a situation would, but I think that it's a blanket statement and I think that it's used inappropriately a lot.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've never even been accused of.
I like it.
See,
Hey, man, someone ever tried to say that to me, I'd sit him down and we'd have a real long conversation on exactly what that is and exactly why I'm fucking not one.
Well, the thing is, all guys have the potential and the ability and the equipment to be a fuckboy. Much like all women have the ability and the equipment to be a female version of a fuckboy, which is a fuckette. It's about whether or not you do that and what actually constitutes being a fuckboy or a fuckgirl. Like, you know, it's about the reality. If you're single and you're talking to a lot of people, as long as it's not too serious between people, that's okay. But if you're telling everyone that you're going to fucking fly off to the moon in heart-shaped fucking hot air balloon, and you're... it's
passing Adam in the space-time continuum.
Yeah, exactly. The worst fuckboys and the fuckgirls, the worst ones are the emotional fuckboys and fuckgirls, not the physical ones like sending a dick pic.
I agree.
It's the emotional ones.
Yeah.
So
I think we've really delved into the fact that it boils down to communication, right?
Exactly. Life is about communication.
You will hear us say it time and time and again. Communication with others, but most importantly, communication with yourself.
Perfect. Absolutely. Paul, you got anything else you want to discuss this week?
I mean, I might have to save the French masturbator story for next week.
Oh, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might have to wait.
Okay, we'll go with the French masturbator story next week. I will tell you all about how I got bit on the ass by a camel. And Leo will tell us about how he had sex in front of 250 people.
Oh, God.
That's called Tuesday.
Actually,
I
do have a story. I do have a story. And it
wait
was at a 1,000 in front of that 250.
Oh, you motherfucker. Oh, that's
I'm going to jail.
Leo, you got anything else you want to push in for this week?
The only thing that I want to say, and you'll hear me say it every week, is communicate with us the same way we want you to communicate with each other and yourselves. Give us that feedback, guys, especially this week because we changed platforms. And keep the lines of communication open with what you want to hear, too. You know, we really we love the feedback. We love to hear what you guys want to have us talk about. And stay tuned because we've got some new segments and some new guest speakers and stuff like that we're going to try and bring on. And we're really excited about the direction things are going and how far we've come. So stick with us, guys.
I, you know, just want to say per the earlier subject content, anyone dealing with the depression and despair, you can reach out at any point. Please message away. We love you, fucks.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard. We've been there. We have absolutely been there. And none at all, ever.
I'd rather fucking stay up and miss out on sleep and keep someone alive than fucking sleep for 8 hours and know that we lost someone.
Yeah.
100%.
All right, Leo, I'm guessing we may as well let you do the wrap-up of the show.
All right, guys, once again, we're super excited that you guys took the time out of your day to sit and listen to us. Hopefully we touched on some things that resonate with you, maybe gave you a different idea on how to look at things perspectively, and we hope we made you laugh too. That being said, stay tuned. Episode 4 will be next week. Our fourth horseman should be feeling a lot better, and he will be with us. And, stay frosty.
Bye, fuckers.
We love you.
All right, guys.
And shepherds we shall be, for thee, my lord, for thee. Power hath descended forth from thy hand.
Cola!
We swiftly carry out thy command. So we shall flow ever forth to thee, and teeming with souls shall it ever be.
In nomine Patri,
et Filii,
Spiritus Sancti.